that child or that individual.
Thank you so much for all of the work that you do. Thank you for joining me today. Tell me again your name and your position.
My name is Shannon Murray. I am, for this community search, I'm the search manager. I have been with Class Kids Foundation, Class Kids Search and Rescue, out of Pensacola, Florida, for about 7 years. And this is one of the things that we do with our organization is we come and we teach how to run community searches.
Thank you so much for your time.
You've been listening to Flashpoints. I'm Sarah Blanco, contributing producer, sitting in for Dennis Bernstein, International Women's Day 2022. Thank you to co-producer Frank Sterling, plus special thanks to all of my guests, as well as Laurie Marshall and Rose Thayer.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon, and here beside me, to my direct right, Jim Gilbert.
Morning, Glenn.
And across from us, our ace engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. If you need any type of sound work, video work, recording work, Joe's your man. Boy, can we vouch for that.
Yeah, it's great. And I wanted to say appreciate you guys coming out here to Northwoods Nursery, where we're at today.
Yep.
Doing this remote recording, which someday I hope we'll be back in the studio.
I'm wondering maybe even next month, April.
Really?
Well, you know, the indoor mask mandates are going to be off next week, or this week is when this we're recording a few days early.
That would be really remarkable, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. I
hope we know what to do.
Yeah, I know. Can't take the breaks we usually do on this remote stuff.
Yeah. Well, we've got a full show and a special ending to the show. Jim will give us some of his thoughts on his travels to Ukraine and what's going on there. It's kind of where the whole Northwoods and Jim Gilbert and One Green World became what they are. Or the impetus of it, anyway, from when he was
32 years ago, I went there for the first time.
Yeah, 1990.
Yeah,
before. So that was after the...
Still the Soviet Union.
But after the Iron Curtain...
Well, Germany had already,
The Berlin Wall.
Berlin Wall had come down.
Yeah,
But the Soviet Union was still functioning.
Yeah. So. Functioning. Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't really realize that... I can't get into that now. I thought there were more people in Russia than there are.
Yeah.
What did they say, 140 million or something like that?
140 million, yeah. It's a big country. But
not as big as the U.S. I mean, not by a long shot. And I also heard that their GDP is only about, 7% of the United States? That's pretty remarkable.
There's a lot of stuff we could talk about.
Yeah, but we're not. We're talking the dirt bag here.
That's right.
And just a rundown of what we got going, we actually have some listeners... questions to talk to about today. We'll answer those. Kind of tough ones, though. Our plant of the month. Last month, we talked about Japanese flowering plum. This month, we're going to talk about the Japanese flowering apricot.
Yeah, if they're flowering plants and bearing fruit, too.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Then... pruning peaches, or just prunus in general, we'll talk about. It's a different... We approach those trees differently than apples and pears. So I thought it might be nice to spend a minute talking about that. We've got the answer to last week's garden stumper, which had to do with alternative pollination method. What's going on... Or rather, now is the time... to start thinking about getting your garden soil prepped and ready for planting. It may be too early, but maybe not. We'll talk about that. our Dirtbag Dictionary term is cambium layer, which has to do with pruning and other things. It has to do with
grafting.
Yep. And then we'll end with Jim's remembrances, we'll say, of his time in Ukraine. And he still has friends there that are just, he really doesn't, can't find out what's going on.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's annoying me. But I also have one other, what's annoying me this month. This is not in the greater scheme of things. This is not big at all. But I'm kind of annoyed at how much importance we give to movie actresses or just actors, is what we use now, on when they voice animated movies. I don't understand what the big deal is about why if Jennifer is voicing a certain character. I would guess it's just more marketing. But it's a recognizable voice. Maybe that helps in the play, but it just kind of annoys me that this doesn't matter to me. That's why it's annoying. Okay, well, back to the dirtbag then. Okay. And our first off the bat from our listener mailbag, email bag, and you can do that too at thedirtbag@kboo.org. Also, and we'll come back to this a few times, but we are in a very short, no frills, all thrills, fundraising. Our membership drive is going on now. And you can do so online at kboo.fm or kboo.org, I believe, and hit the, donate now.
And that'll help keep this very unique gardening show on the air.
Tis. We don't know of anyone other one. We don't know of any other gardening show that's being filmed in Liberal.
Well, actually, between Liberal and Needy.
Well, there too. I mean, yeah. I mean, that expands our reach.
That's right. Needy. Anybody recording a show in Needy? I don't think so.
Yeah. So anyway, we're glad to be able to bring you this show. And you know, you live long as we have, which when we total our ages up now, let's see, Jim, that's, well, it's more than 150 years.
Calculator's almost melting.
It's not 150 years, but it's close.
Yeah, probably, huh? Yeah. Whew. I haven't been doing, working with plants for all those 170
Well, that's true.
Years, but
over 100 years then of gardening experience between the two of us. And if we throw in Joe, it's also 100. No, I shouldn't say that. Joe has, Joe might have a little bit of gardening experience. Yeah. He does okay. Yeah. That was cruel.
Joe is learning a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know how we got onto that. Oh, yes. Become a member of KBOO and help support all parts of the station, not just the dirtbag. Well, one of our ace listeners, Heath, who has written in to answer some of our garden stumpers, has also posed quite a series of questions here. I have a number of fruit trees, he says, and grapevines, and I have effectively given up on the idea of keeping a grass-free perimeter around them. Too much work at the wrong time of year. At the same time, I'm noticing that their growth and fruiting has diminished. This raises a couple of questions. Is it really important to keep grass away from trees or vines? And if so, how far away? And what is the best way to do so? Is mowing grass short an acceptable substitute for eradication? Jim is nodding his...
Shaking his head. Continue, Glenn.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, I know in the past you have mentioned how that it is important to keep grass away from...
It's essential, really.
Essential.
I can remember several times, one time my son actually lives in Corvallis, planted a fig tree in his parking strip and didn't, just grass. He just planted it in the grass and just left it like that. And the poor tree... it might have grown a couple of inches a year. I mean, the big problem with weeds and grass is they can outcompete the plant. They take the nutrients and the water and everything, and their goal is survival. And the poor plant just takes whatever's left over after they take it out from the top. So, you got to really, if you really want good growth on fruiting plants, probably any plant for that matter, you really need to keep the weeds away from it.
And how far away? And we're talking about the the trunk, the stem
yeah,
here.
Right. Well, I would say a minimum of 2 feet.
Okay, Heath, a minimum of 2 feet.
In what each is direction. So a 4 foot diameter spot, a whole area around a tree would be ideal. You can get by with a little less, especially if it's younger.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think 2 feet each way is a good rule for it. And it's interesting, you know, thinking about Heath's question, what happened here at Northwoods Nursery was several years ago, we just could not control, we used to control our weeds by, we would rototill a row, plant our rootstock, then we'd take a manure spreader and spread sawdust down along the tops of those, around the trees. And that worked pretty good for a while, but by the second year, and the trees all had to stay in the ground for 2 years, by the second year, our weeds are coming up. And we just ran out of, we didn't have enough crew to control them. So we were in Korea around that time. We took a trip to Korea looking for some interesting ideas and plants and stuff. And what we noticed was that in their experimental gardens, they were using landscape fabric. And they'd put down landscape fabric as a weed control. And it was just remarkable, the difference. We came home, we spent the energy we would have taken to pull all those weeds, and we put down landscape fabric around our permanent plantings. And I mean, it was just a night and day experience, really. Really a huge, huge difference. And, you know, all the energy and time and so forth of weeding, very little of it, just right around the base of the plant. We have to sometimes pull weeds, but generally speaking, it keeps everything's happy.
So let me point out here that you went to Korea to look for things and get ideas, and this wasn't what you were expecting.
That's right.
Which is one of the benefits of travel.
That's right.
Doesn't necessarily mean traveling any place. It just means any place in particular. It just means looking.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing what in the world and, you know, all over the world, people are doing the same things we're doing. You know, gardening is kind of like international language. I mean, everybody's doing it, and people figure out how to make it work.
I don't want to get away from the rest of Heath's questions here. Then, so you've answered some of them that it's very important there, and keep it about 2 feet away. So that would be, you know, a 4 foot diameter, or do you mean a 2 foot diameter?
I would, if you can do it, I would say 4 foot diameter is ideal. Sure.
And then the last two questions is, what is the best way to do so? And is mowing grass short an acceptable substitute for eradication?
The grass is continually trying to grow, and cutting it short or letting it grow was not going to make a difference,
right,
really. It's going to continue to pull the nutrients out.
And so the best way to do so, what I would recommend, just for, you know, rather than if you just have a few trees or maybe a dozen or more, is to use cardboard and wood chips or compost or leaves or just anything.
Yeah.
And that will kill the grass probably within a year or two. And within a year or two, the cardboard will disintegrate. And you might need to put down more cardboard then.
Yeah, and that's a good alternative to using landscape fabric. But what you point out is it will break down. And another issue that will happen is weed seeds will start in the top in the compost and whatever you've put on top of the cardboard, and grow down through it. So it's less long term than using landscape fabric.
Yeah, I guess I was getting to the question of the aesthetics of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you want to look at landscape fabric?
I want to look at the fruit.
but that's only on for a month or something like that. So anyway, so the issue is keeping the weeds at bay, mm-hmm. and you know, if depending on what the look that you want.
And I think it also, just an interesting point, when we first started using landscape fabric was actually before we went to Korea. I tried using it in some seaberry plantings I had, and I made a mistake. And I didn't know I was making the mistake, but for the reasons you just mentioned, I thought, maybe not aesthetics, but I thought, well, if I'm putting down landscape fabric, I should put like straw on top of it to add to the mulching ability, features of that. Mm. Well, that was a big mistake because weed started growing in that straw, yeah. and they went down through the landscape fabric.
Right, which is and tough.
Very hard to get rid of them at that point.
Yeah.
So we had to dig the whole thing up eventually. So,
right.
You know, yeah. Keep your if you're using landscape fabric, it's good. I try to keep it clean on top. You can always put some cardboard on top of it if you want, or, you know.
Well, yeah. But
paint a picture or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, that should give Heath and other gardeners that have this issue that, yes, you should get rid of the grass and, you know, put down a mulch.
Yeah. I never thought of it. I wonder if you could you probably paint it green? You know, landscape fabric is black, but could you, like, I know California, there's places where they basically have painted yards.
and fake grass.
There's another thought, fake grass, yeah.
Around the trees. Okay, we're getting on. Okay, we'll go to our last question here, and then we'll take our first musical break. This is from our listener, Shelley. And I do want to mention this, the first thing that she said, I just discovered your show, and I'm so glad I did. And parenthetically, she says, though when I heard Dirtbag, I thought you guys were climbers. And Joe and Jim and I had a little discussion here before we went on the air. Well, what does that have to do with climbers? And we thought, well, maybe the chalk bag is called a dirt bag.
Somebody could answer that question.
Indeed. They can send us an email at thedirtbag@kboo.org.
Yeah.
Her question, somewhat similar. We have a school garden and volunteers are constantly battling blackberries. Any solutions for that? We also have native roses that creep up into our raised beds we would like to control.
I went through a blackberry control project here last fall, an area where we were going to build a greenhouse. We didn't build the greenhouse. We used it for storage, then neglected it. And when we decided to build the greenhouse, which we're going to do here soon, the blackberries had decided this was a really nice spot for them. And they covered up all the storage, all those plant pots we put there and everything. I spent several days out there dealing with that, cutting it back. And then I would say from that experience, if you can do it, the most effective way to deal with blackberries if you're not going to use some terrible herbicide, is to dig them up. Because, you know, cut them back to where you can get into the area and get a fork or a spade or something and just go down and dig those roots up.
Yeah. It just really depends on how many you have, whether that's, you know, hand control. The second suggestion would be to just keep cutting them back.
Yeah.
And when they're young, they're much easier to control. They're tenderer. So, you know, don't let them get more than, say, a foot long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within a few years, you will have robbed the plant of the ability to replenish its nutrients.
Yeah.
And so the plant will just die. And, you know, you can do that by hand or with a weed whacker or, but the best thing would be to dig them out.
Yeah.
And you'll probably get most of them.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I noticed about blackberries is that they tend to grow, they're like a moving vine sort of infestation. And as they move, the center part it's not alive anymore.
Oh, I see.
So that if you go around the perimeter of a big blackberry patch,
thicket,
you know, you can pretty much get rid of them because the inside part it's all died because it's been smothered by the outside part. Interesting.
And as far as the native roses, while I don't have much experience on that, I would guess the same thing. Just get your hand clippers out, clip it out close to the ground, and then the next, when you see it start growing again, clip it off some more.
Yep.
Yeah. Unless, like Jim says, you're going to use some horrible chemical.
There's some pretty strong herbicides that blackberries are not easy to control that
right.
way.
And even with that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Please send us your gardening questions, and maybe we'll be able to answer them live in the next month or two.
And hopefully, if we're live, somebody can actually call in.
Whew.
No.
Been a couple of years.
It has been, yeah.
Okay, well, let's take our first musical break, and then we'll come back with the our plant of the month, Japanese flowering apricot. I chose the theme for our musical selections this time in honor of getting ready for the to start digging in your soil. So we're going to talk about ready, set, and go. So the first one is from, boy, we've got the same thing happened here again. I didn't print it out, but it's from Willie Dixon, a Willie Dixon song sung by Muddy Waters called I'm Ready For You. I think that's it anyway. Okay.
Shoot tombstone full of wine, balls and chain. I'm drinking tea and tea, I'm smoking down a mine. I hope some screwball start a fight.
I'm ready for you. You know what I was thinking about when I was choosing these songs? You know, a lot of them have to do about, you know, their girlfriends or their women problems or whatnot. And I thought, you know, and they never really mentioned that that's what it is, but it could be, we could think about that they're talking about winter, mm. when they're having all these problems with winter.
Mm.
So think about that when you listen to these sure. tunes there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Now I'm thinking about spring, however.
Yes, which we should hear.
Yes.
Flowering apricot on our plant of the month.
Yes.
Japanese flowering apricot.
And what a harbinger of spring this plant is. I hope some of the listeners are growing it because it's in middle of January, some of the varieties are blooming and the flowers are fragrant. Some have white flowers. One that we have had here for many years called Konko Bai has pink flowers. So what would be nicer than, you know, you're kind of in the middle of an Oregon winter and you have a plant in your yard that has pink flowers on it and is fragrant. And when that sun comes out and you get a little taste of sunshine in the middle of the winter and you got this beautiful plant in your yard and wow.
That'd lift your spirits.
It would be. It's nice, you know. And then so by some miracle, pretty much every year you get fruit. And I've been thinking about this some, I mean, and observing, and what I've noticed is that the plants, they start blooming early, but they hold on to some of their buds, their flower buds, mm-hmm. and they do it over quite a period of time.
And we should mention here now, this is different than the apricot that we normally would eat, I suppose.
That's right.
Or try to grow. I mean, Jim, I don't know how long we've been asking for listeners' feedback. You know, Does anybody grow an apricot that they reliably get fruit? And we have yet to find a yes.
I found one, though. I'm going to tell you
after.
I got a little quick story after we talk about flowering apricot. So flowering apricot, the Latin name is Prunus mume. And the fruit is most widely known by folks from Japan and some other parts of Asia where they make it into like a pickled plum and a very tasty fruit. But what I discovered in my travels in Korea, I went to a factory where they make syrup and liqueurs from this fruit, and the syrup is outrageous. What they do basically, when we've done it here now at our place, you basically cut up the fruit, put it in a jar, put half by weight, half fruit, half sugar. Put it in a jar that over a period of about a month, the sugar pulls the juice out of the fruit, and then you pour off the syrup that's resulting from that, and it's awesome. You can use it like a syrup, or you can make a really wonderful sparkling beverage by putting a little bit in a glass and add some sparkling mineral water, and it's great, really wonderful soda.
Is the fruit eaten just raw?
It's tart. It's not like it looks like an apricot, but it's not an apricot, we think of as
it's a flowering
apricot,
and
that Latin name is Prunus armeniaca, the actual fruiting apricot, which, like you say, we are trying to find one that will grow here and bear fruit.
Well, I'm anxious to hear you found one.
Well, yeah. So anyway, but the Prunus mume, Japanese flowering apricot, is definitely worth putting in your garden, and I highly recommend it for the Northwest.
Is it a fruit tree size plant, or is it?
Yeah, not big. Doesn't get super big. I mean, it's definitely, I would say, peach size. You know, peach, apple, smaller, semi dwarf apple size. But
those can be big. Yeah,
we've had them here for quite a while, and they're definitely an easy plant to grow and take care of.
Okay,
and much happier in our climate than the regular apricot. But my story about apricot was, I was in Portland with Joe actually a few days ago. And we were interviewing a friend for a documentary we were working on. Well, our friend also happened to have a yard that he really wanted to show us. And so we wandered around his yard. As we got toward the end of the tour, he says, "Well, look at this. I'm living on a place that used to be an apricot orchard." Well, boy, did my ears pick up with that. And I said, "Well, tell me more about that." Well, he didn't know much about the history of it, but there was this huge old, it was a huge trunk. The tree itself wasn't so big, but an old apricot tree. I said, "Wow, that's amazing," because I've been looking for an old apricot tree in Portland. Now, who knows what variety it is or anything, but the fact that it survived until now is probably 60 years old.
Yeah, well, I mentioned last month, you know, that maybe it wasn't on the air, but there's a Portland Heritage apricot tree in my neighborhood.
And that's what, yes, and we want to see that. I definitely want to check that out.
It's as big as you described this one, too. What part of town was the one that you saw?
It's what's that? Where was it? It's close in southeast, and you know, an old part of Portland. You know, probably a part of Portland was houses were, you know, 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I got some cuttings off of it. He told me last year it had 6 fruit on it. So
well, you know, it's not that we can't grow the plant. You know, you just don't get
this one that you know about. Does it have fruit?
Well, I very rarely go by it, but I can. I mean, that's only 18 blocks away.
So we'll make a field trip, Glenn. Okay,
right.
I'm gonna go check that out. But anyway, I was pretty excited about it. So I got some cuttings, and we're gonna propagate it here and put it in our collection, our variety trial, and see what it does.
Yeah.
But
go ahead.
I also was kind of just yesterday, not far from where we're sitting, are a bunch of seedling apricots, which I got seed from my friend in New Jersey, who had brought plants from Uzbekistan years ago, and the seeds came from those plants. We planted out seedlings, and I noticed that there's some flower buds on them, which is pretty exciting. I mean, they're not open yet, but they're buds.
Yeah.
There's a couple hundred of those, so maybe one of them will do something special.
Yeah, that and climate change, you know, you might be successful.
That's right.
Okay, well, good. That's our plant of the month.
Yep. Japanese flowering apricot.
Well, we'll just, before we get to the garden stumpers, we'll just talk a little bit about pruning of the Prunus or peaches and nectarines. And, you know, my rule of thumb always has been for peaches and nectarines anyway, and plums, maybe it's true with all Prunus, to take about 2/3 of last year's growth off. Because with peaches and with Prunus, they fruit, well, not so much plums, but with peaches and nectarines anyway, they exclusively fruit on last year's new growth. So even though, you know, if you don't prune at all, you can imagine then the tree just gets bigger and bigger, because you get new growth, that's where the fruit is, so you got to leave it. So by pruning off 2/3 of it or so, you will spur new growth for next year. So it's renewal pruning what you're doing. And even though you're pruning off that much, you could prune that much off, it's unlikely that you'll prune that much off, and you'll still have plenty of fruit. But the fruit that you do get will be bigger and better, we'll say.
That's a good rule of thumb. Yeah, and what we do also is just thinning too, you know, to kind of keep the plant from getting too dense. So you have good air movement. You know, if there's a lot of little small, you remove smaller branches that are not really doing anything. And I think something else that's important, I believe, for prunus is the time of pruning. We prune our apples and pears in January, February, but we wait on the prunus until we have a spell of relatively nice weather, which we've noticed it seems to prevent disease spread by doing it that way. So we hold off on the prunus until, you know, now when we get some dry days.
Yeah, it could, that could happen.
Mm-hmm. Could.
Yeah, well, March, you know.
Yeah, it's still March. That's right.
Yeah, I read one weather blog that said the last couple of years we've had more rain in March than we have in February. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's funny. Another funny aside is that one of our tasks here is peach. We're looking for new peach varieties that are resistant to peach leaf curl. One of the most difficult diseases for peaches in our climate and nectarines, and we haven't had a good spring for the last couple of years. That was so Lorraine's funny. She's telling me
testing, I think you're saying.
Yeah. I'm rooting for a really lousy spring.
She may be alone, but
yeah, that's right. But anyway,
all in the name of science.
The name of science.
Yeah. You're right. Okay, Jim, you know what time it is?
Well, I'm only gonna guess, but I think it's the Garden Stuffer.
Okay, well, let's do the answer to last week's stumper, and then we will have the new one.
Yeah, and last week's stumper was
last month.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a month if I can remember it. You know, basically, what we know is that bees and other insects and other animals pollinate flowers of different fruit trees and ornamental trees and so forth. And the stumper was, what other method of pollination is there?
And we asked for a example, I believe, did we not?
We did. We did ask for an example. So the answer, of course, was wind pollination.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. And I think one of the we had a couple of correct answers.
Yes, yes. Yeah. People wrote to thedirtbag@kboo.org.
Yep, and of course somebody, whoever, well, I can't remember who it was the first correct answer won the tool sharpening.
That's right. Yep. At Cully Farm Store.
And examples of plants that are pollinated by wind, fruiting plants, are olives, hazelnuts.
Filberts, if you're an Oregonian.
Filberts, yeah. Sea berry.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 I was just a little dumbfounded, or not dumbfounded. I was struck because I actually remembered something that I wanted to mention when we answered this. And that is, my wife and I motored to Eugene a week ago. And it was very apparent along the way, now there's just a whole bunch of hazelnut orchards.
Mm.
And that, you know, that's just about all you see. I mean, there's a few other crops there along the way, but they're still planting more of that. But it is very apparent this time of year of which are the row of male plants and which one are the females.
Mm-hmm.
The males are a little bit taller, and they have much bigger and pronounced catkins. And that is the source of pollen.
Yep.
For that.
Yep. And I would imagine, you know, there are other trees that have catkins too. And catkins are kind of, they're very pretty. And the hazelnut or filbert, they come out very early. So like early January, they'll start to grow. And another fascinating thing about hazelnuts or filberts is that the female flower, the catkin is the male flower. The female flower is tiny.
Yes.
Tiny, and you have to go. I would encourage the listeners to go take a look at a blooming filbert tree, and look for that female flower, because it's a little red flower, and then from what I understand, learned years ago, is that pollen grain goes into that flower and it doesn't actually pollinate it immediately. The pollination actually happens a couple of months later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We have to find out more about that.
Maybe some listener thinks can tell me I'm full of it, but you know. Anyway, yeah.
You don't have to write us for that.
No. But it would be, you know, if anybody knows something about that that I don't know, but that's what I remember learning a long time ago.
Huh. Well, a question that I had was, do the males even produce nuts?
The pollinators produce nuts too. Yep. Both, they're just better. They just have more pollen. They're more, and the nuts are not usually as good, as big, and as valuable as the ones from the female.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And they're sometimes shaped differently.
Yeah.
They're a little more pointy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it depends on the variety. Okay. There's a lot of varieties now. And we can thank our famous filbert researcher, hazelnut researcher in Corvallis, Sean Mehlenbacher, for all of his work to create ones that are resistant to eastern filbert blight. It saved Oregon's industry.
Yeah.
And there's several varieties now that are very popular, very valuable, and that's why you see so many getting planted, because our climate is perfect for them.
Yeah. Well, that leads us to the next, or to our garden stumper for this month. And it was going to be a two-parter, but now it's going to be a one-parter. because the question, the two-parter was going to be, what is Oregon's state nut?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we can still go with that. But the other part is, what is unique about that designation?
Mm.
So, two-parter, what is Oregon's state nut? And what is unique about its designation? Okay, if you know the answer to that, please write us an email or even a voice memo. And you can send it to thedirtbag@kboo.org. And if you are ready to become a member or to renew your membership at KBOO, please go to the KBOO website, kboo.fm. I think you can also get there with kboo.org. Maybe that's the more important one. And then click on the donate button, where it's very, this membership drive is very no frills, all thrills. So just, we're in and out. There we are.
Okay.
Okay, let's see here. Let's take our second musical break and we'll come back. We've done Ready. Now we're on the set part of Ready, Set, Go. And this is Dire Straits. For maybe their first album, I can't remember exactly, but it's called Setting Me Up. You're listening to The Dirt Bag. This is Glenn Andreessen with Jim Gilbert and our ace engineer, Joe Wilson, out here at the bucolic
Northwoods
Nursery.
Uh-huh. Nook. We've decided, Glenn, we're in the liberal nook. And we call it that because in this last little freeze events we had, our temperature here was remarkably low.
Oh, I see.
and we got down to 18 degrees two nights during this a week ago.
And well, we were 21 something. So
really,
yeah.
Well, that's amazing. That's interesting because you know Aurora was like 23 and then funny because the golf course Arrowhead Golf Course that's just a couple of miles from us was 15.
Woof.
I mean, wow. So there's some differences.
Well, speaking of differences, I can't remember the difference between pastoral and bucolic. But there is. One might have to do with fields versus something else. You know, trees or, you know, meadow. You know, I don't know.
Sure.
Anyway.
That's a good one to play around with.
Yeah. Something to think about. Hey, also something to think about is that, you know, it's getting time. I haven't planted my peas yet, but my notes told me that I had already planted them last year at this time.
Hmm.
So it's time to get out there. I did cover up the soil with my glass panes 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I think the soil will be ready to roll. I just have to get out there and do it.
It got remarkably warm and, you know, still pretty warm. I don't know what you feel like about the air temperature right now, but, you know it was 56 degrees a couple days ago.
Yeah. Well, the normal high average high, I should say, this time of year is 54. So, you know, it's time to start warming up some.
Yep.
You know, we did have that little nice burst in February.
Yep.
Record high, 67. So, just caution you once again that if the soil is sticking to your shovel, it might be a little early. But this is the perfect time to plant fruit trees, bare root trees, and other plants that are, you know, anytime you can plant a potted plant. And, you can put out the cold, hardy vegetables, starts of cabbage and cauliflower. Maybe cauliflower wait a little bit, but onions. You can seed beets and carrots. But only if your soil is workable. I mean, you don't want to be able to make clods with it. And if you have enough organic matter in there, then you can plant pretty much year-round.
You know, it's funny. I have a tiny story to tell. My daughter, who lives in Bellingham, wanted to plant a fruit tree. Now, of course, her dad grows lots of them, but she wanted a combination tree, which we don't grow anymore, different fruits on the same, different varieties on the same tree. So she went to a box store and she bought this tree for not too bad a price, $17 or $18. She got it home, took the bag off the roots, and there weren't any.
No roots?
Hardly anything. It was so pathetic. She took it back and showed us what it was like. And it made me, the reason I mentioned that is because I really think it's important to support the local nurseries. If you're going to get a fruit tree, you want to put a fruit tree in your yard, you know, if you go to a local nursery, you can go back and talk to them about if there's a problem, but you're likely to get a really good quality plant that way. And I would recommend it.
And I don't know if it was you or if it was Ted, our comrade Ted Svensson, who said, you know, if the salesperson can't tell you what the rootstock is on the tree, you know, don't get it.
Yep, that was that's something we talked about years and years ago. One of the sort of radical things that we did in the retail side of our business was to actually, and some others did this too, you know, we told people what the rootstock was, because the word dwarf on, for example, an apple tree can be anywhere from
anything the grower wants it to be.
That's right. It's a very liberal term.
Oh, wait a minute. We don't mean that way.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I would be willing to bet that fewer than 1% of big box store clerks would be able to tell you what the rootstock is or anything about the rootstock.
Yeah.
Well, it says semi-dwarf on there, so you should be good.
Yeah.
No. Semi-dwarf is not appropriate in the city.
Yeah.
Commercial guys don't use anything but probably the foliage dwarfing they can get.
But if you know, of course, one thing about knowing the rootstock is knowing if somebody tells you, well, yes, it's on M26 or M7 or M111 or one of those numbers, you know, they may not know what those numbers mean.
Right.
But
at least you could look, you could research it.
You could research it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So.
Yeah. And I, semi-dwarf is, I wouldn't totally say it wouldn't be okay for a city, because it depends upon what the rootstock is that's underneath it. There, you could have a you could have a tree that's like on a what's called semi-dwarf that could be 90% of standard, which would mean it would be a huge tree, or it could be 60% or 50% depending on what the rootstock is. So the words are tough, you know.
Well, I guess my point is that, you know, why not go dwarfing, you know, rather than semi-dwarf for the city? I mean, in this day and age, you know, there's just smaller yards. You know, even if a tree gets 10 feet tall, you know, that's pretty small by some standards. But what if it's 15? And as Jim, as we were mentioning earlier, you don't want to be planting things underneath it. And so it better be a real fine favorite if you're going to devote that much space to it.
Right. Yeah, there's a couple of and again, it's really tough. I mean, like when, again, using these words, you know, like I, because when I think dwarf, typically I think of trees that can be challenged a little bit in wind. You know, the dwarf, if it's a like M26 mm-hmm. rootstock, mm-hmm. generally okay in a protected location. But if there's some wind, it'll lean.
Yeah, you know, and they usually should be staked.
Yeah, staking is an issue.
Yeah. See, there's a lot to learn, and one of my go-to advice points is don't accept free plants. Because why do people give away plants? Because they've got a lot of them. Well, why do they have a lot of them? It's because they spread.
Yeah, well, I remember.
And so, just, you know, and people would get free plants left over from free trees, you know, fruit trees from, you know, even Friends of Trees or something like that, you know, for a semi-dwarf pear. Well, you know, there's not really any true dwarfing pears. I mean, they're on the smallest rootstock you got, but compared to an apple, they're larger or taller. Yeah. So anyway, that's just one of my...
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember going to a nonprofit organization some years ago that had gotten a bunch of free trees and from some nursery that, you know, had a bunch of extra ones. And the nursery obviously wasn't growing them for our region, because what they had were Granny Smith apples. Oh. People were, you know, were giving them away, but
yeah.
It doesn't ripen here. So,
yeah. You know, it's kind well, of, anyway. So... this talk of, you know, it's time. It's definitely time to plant bare root trees. You know, go to your local retail or nursery and talk to the clerks.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Well, our dirtbag dictionary term is cambium layer, and this has to do with not pruning. Well, I guess somewhat pruning, but more grafting.
Yep, and when we talk about cambium here at the nursery, where the challenge in grafting is matching. The cambium layers of the cambium layer of the rootstock and the cambium layer of the scion, the stick you stick on top of the rootstock, they've got to touch each other, and the cambium just underneath the bark. If you cut the cross section of a piece of wood, you've got the center, the very woody part of the stick or the rootstock, and then you've got this layer on between that and the bark, which is the cambium layer, and that's where the cells are multiplying.
It's more than this, but it's kind of the green part.
Yeah.
If you were to take your fingernail and to scratch in on any branch. And if you saw green, then that's the cambium layer,
right?
That's part of it anyway.
Yeah, the surface of it, and then then it goes. It's very thin, but it's there. It's probably, you know, depending on the size of the stick, you know, it could be, I suppose, even as much as a 16th of an inch. But it's pretty thin, and so when you're grafting, you really have to match at least one side of that scion wood to the rootstock so that those cells can grow together.
And that's essentially, at its essence, what grafting is matching the cambium.
Yep, that's right.
You can stick any two sticks together, but, you know, for one, you have to have the cambium. But then, Jim, tell me this, you know, what if the plant is not compatible, so to speak? What if you tried to graft a pear onto an apple.
Well, pear and apple might grow for a little while.
Pear and cherry.
Yeah, pear and cherry, right. Yeah, well, that's the thing. The cells in the cherry and the cells in the pear are not compatible with each other, and so they won't work.
Would it be a fair comparison to, say, if you had a heart transplant or any type of a human transplant and your body rejected it? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
It's and I don't think they make anything for drugs you can give to a tree to make it work.
If they put a pig something into a human, which they did recently, what was that?
I can't remember. I read about that heard about it.
Yeah, I can't remember what part it was now. But anyway, they take anti-rejection drugs. Yep. But like you said, there's nothing that can do that. So anyway, cambium layer, very important.
Yep.
And the more points that you can match up on the cambium layers, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the whole nature of propagation, really, when you're doing it, vegetative propagation, not by cuttings, but by grafting or budding. The same thing with budding, which is a form of grafting.
Yeah.
Or matching the cambium layer.
Yeah. Okay, well, I do want to let you take the remaining time here to talk about your experiences in Ukraine. And we even have a special musical treat after Jim talks about his experiences there. And we will go out then after that with our last tune in the Ready, Set, Go theme. And Go is I'm Gonna Go Fishing. This is the Duke of Ellington tune, but it's done by Dr. John, so we'll listen to that. But we'll let Jim talk about his beginnings.
Thanks, Glenn. First, I have to say, I'm glad to have done this show with you, both of you guys, because this whole situation in Ukraine makes me very sad, and just some distraction and happiness feels good to me, but I'm definitely losing sleep over it. And it's that's a situation that brings tears to my eyes because I have such good friends there and they don't deserve this. Nobody deserves war, but such an unnecessary situation like this, it's just deplorable. I haven't any frame of reference for it in my lifetime, or, especially in 2022, the world has become very closely connected electronically in all sorts of different ways, trade, economies, and all that. I'm really happy, I guess, that if you can be happy about such a thing, is that sanctions are, many, many countries have taken Ukraine's side and see the injustice of this and how terrible it is and are speaking up about it. And I think it's also important to mention that, a lot of people in Russia also do not like what's going on. Unfortunately, they have no way to express their feelings. People get arrested for demonstrating there. The media is totally controlled by the government, so the only information they can get is maybe some kind of online stuff they can find. Our friends there, I know, feel really bad about it. Ukrainians and Russians are close to each other. I mean, many people in Ukraine spoke Russian. Russian was the national language of Ukraine until the end of the Soviet Union. Because I speak Russian, I would go there and talk with folks, and everybody was happy to talk with me about stuff. And so, I'm hoping. I mean, this is not so much the plant part of my life, but just the human part is. I really, really hope that they can find new leadership in Russia. Russia deserves a leader that really cares about the people and will work for the benefit of the people. And the current leader and the oligarchs that surround him don't care. They're interested in the money. And if you look at Russia's economy and what's going on with Russia, they basically are a huge source of energy, minerals and oil and so forth. But as far as the actual economy itself, starting a small business there is very difficult. It's not a place that encourages individual initiative. And people just put up with it. They put up with pothole roads and, it's not terrible. They live and get along and stuff, but it could certainly be better. But my own personal connection with Ukraine started in 1990 when I went there with a group of people, mostly from the California rare fruit growers. and it was a guided tour. And I had never been to the Soviet Union before, of course. It was my first real trip overseas, except for Canada. I'd never been across any ocean. And I remember getting, when I got to Russia, that we flew into Moscow, and I remember taking my primitive Russian language out into the parking lot and seeing if I could talk to a taxi driver, if he'd understand me. That was kind of fun. But we quickly started traveling, and we went to several cities. When we went to Kiev, which of course the capital of Ukraine, that was a real eye opener for me, because they put on a little presentation for us at the Kiev Botanic Garden, and I saw fruits there that I had never seen before or really even heard of. Honeyberry, for example, an edible form of honeysuckle, seaberry, which we've talked about on the show before, magnolia vine, a very interesting vine that grows in Russian Far East, and all these plants had been collected and brought to Kiev, and they've been growing there. It's sort of like, it was a botanic garden, it was a display garden. Carnelian cherry, edible form of dogwood that, all we were growing in America were ornamental ones, and here all of a sudden there's this really tasty fruit on a beautiful plant that we didn't know about. So it was a real eye opener for me, and I think really set me really expanded my knowledge and my career, you could say, because I was able to import a number of plants from people that I met there and start offering them to American gardeners. Of course, because I spoke some Russian, I could also make friends there. And I realized really quickly on my travels that I wanted to, the group that we were on was a guided tour, and I wanted to go and spend more time with the plants. And what they would do is we'd spend half a day at the Botanic Garden, for example, and then the rest of the 2.5 days would be spent visiting, going to churches and other tourist spots. So I just took off on my own and went back to the Botanic Garden. And I remember one of my goals was to make a friend. I wanted to make a friend because I knew I was going to come back and I wanted to know somebody. So I remember going back to the Botanic Garden, and I met this young man who was growing hardy kiwi plants. And he was basically misting them with a hose because he didn't have anything fancy. He had this bed and it was in the shade, and they were stuck cuttings, and he was misting them. And I got to know him. I got his phone number and talked with him. And so in 1991, I had done a trip in the Soviet Union with some other friends. There was six of us that went, Americans who went on a horticultural tour. And at the end of that tour, I happened to be in Moscow when the coup occurred, and Gorbachev was isolated down in Crimea, and these generals tried to take over. So the day of that, I was at a demonstration in Leningrad, which then became St. Petersburg. And that evening, I took a train to Kiev. And I got to Kiev, there's all these demonstrations were going on, and I had a friend. So so I went to, and I got to stay with my friend, and I got to meet more people and make more friends. And then in 1992, I went there again. And I happened to arrive in Kiev at a moment that just before some people I knew from the Botanic Garden were taking off on an expedition. And the goal of the expedition was to find orchards of Carnelian cherry, old orchards in the western part of Ukraine. And we traveled in this old bus, and we slept in barns and wherever we could sleep, and looked at these old orchards. And what I remember about that trip was remarkable, that the people I was with were very interested in all the herbs they could find. So the bus became like an herbarium. They would go out and collect all these plants and hang them inside the bus. And, it was wonderful. It was a great fragrance. And, it was really very, very cool. And anyway,
Well, it's too bad we don't have more time for your recollections of your travels there. Yeah. But we will end with our a tribute, I guess, to Ukraine with their national anthem. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. Well, we thank you for listening to The Dirtbag and encourage you to make your donation at the kbuo.org. Meanwhile, Jim, thank you very much. Hang in there.
Welcome, Glenn. See you next month.
Yep. Joe, appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 8 de marzo del 2022. El número de muertes confirmadas por coronavirus ha superado los 6 millones en todo el mundo, 2 años después del inicio de la pandemia. Los investigadores creen que el número real es mucho mayor y los modeladores de enfermedades de la Universidad de Washington estiman que más de 15 millones de personas han muerto por el COVID-19. En los Estados Unidos, las hospitalizaciones han caído muy por debajo de los máximos históricos de enero, pero casi 1.500 personas al día siguen muriendo de